I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. And now it comes down to Boston and St. Louis. By many measures, just another World Series. 2004 may be better remembered for how the Red Sox got here. Team President Larry Lucchino once referred to New York as the evil empire, and so it has appeared to generations of Red Sox fans. The Yankees striding like pinstriped stormtroopers into battle. Legends of baseball, DiMaggio, Gehrig, Mantle, Root, Munson, Pinella, Jeter, and A-Rod. On the other side of the field, the forever challengers, Ted Williams, Johnny Pesky, Carl Yastrzemski, Carlton Fisk. And today, in the glorious autumn moment where heaven holds a place for those who pray, Pedro, Manny, Damon, Schilling, Ortiz, and the others.
Base is loaded. Here's the pitch. Swinging a high drive to deep right. Back toward the corner it goes. Sheffield looking up. Grand slam. Johnny Damon with one swing of the bat.
The 1-0 pitch. Swinging a ground ball to second base. Hokey Reese has it. He throws to first, and the Red Sox have won the American League pennant. They bob Allen Embry on the mound. The Boston Red Sox. This is the most important of them all, is the Red Sox have won the pennant, beating the New York Yankees, their arch rivals.
It has become a classic, perhaps the most consistently dramatic rivalry in sports, a metaphor for trying and wishing and failing, ultimately a lesson in winning and losing. But then there was the 19-year-old Yankees fan quoted in a New York paper who said, "Everything I've always known to be right has been proven wrong." So here's our question today. What really has changed? What happens when a rivalry so laden with curses and superstitions tips the other way? How do the Red Sox define themselves now that they've toppled the one team that continually sealed their fate? And how do you think teams are made, if not just by plays and players? Is it magic and myth? Our number's 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Joining us today, three charter citizens of Baseball Nation. Harvey Frommer joins us from Dartmouth College. He's a sports historian and the author of more than 30 books, including Red Sox versus Yankees, The Great Rivalry. Harvey, it's good to have you with us.
It's great being on the show. It was a wonderful opening, and I'm sure we're going to have a lot of fun.
Okay. Buster Olney is joining us from his home in New York. He's a senior writer for ESPN, the magazine, and author of The Last Night of the Yankee Dynasty. Boy, that was a quick turnaround on that book.
Good morning, and I'm in the midst of a lot of depressed people down here.
Okay, well, we're going to try and work with you, not against you here, Buster. Thank you for joining us. Bob Ryan's also on the line. He's joining us from Boston. He's a sports columnist for the Boston Globe and author of When Boston Won the World Series. Hi, Bob.
Hi, and unlike Buster, I'm in the midst of delirious people.
Okay, kind of. You just sort of move some of those beer bottles off your desk for a moment.
That's correct.
I want to go around the table, and Bob Ryan, I'm going to start with you, because I'd like to hear each of you. I know you think about this. I want you to try and find a simple way of defining this rivalry for us. Bob.
Well, it's Athens and Sparta, and except that the point, it depends only on your point of view, which is which. I mean, and that's it. I mean, it's that kind of a thing. It's a, you know, this it all. The reason it's the baseball matters is that the cities have viewed each other in a certain way. Boston clearly has an inferiority complex regarding New York. I grew up in New Jersey, and I have been up here 40 years, so I've observed this from afar. I am with them, but I'm not really of them. And I have observed this pathological hatred that people have, irrational hatred of the city of New York. And New York, of course, dismisses Boston as a irrelevant backwater where you can't even get a beer after 1 o'clock the night you win the, you know, you win the big game. This fuels the thing up here, and then to have the bigger guy whip you or you know enjoy success to the extent that the Yankees have 26 times to your none since you know the infamous Babe Ruth circumstance has exacerbated the whole thing.
And Harvey, you actually address this in your book. You say it's way more than two teams. It's two cities. It's owners. It's styles. How big is this list?
It's really a whole culture going against another culture. There's a story, it's a kind of a fable that we cite in our book, Red Sox versus Yankees, The Great Rivalry, the White Sox fan, the Cub fan, and the Red Sox fan. They meet in the woods in New Hampshire, and they are dying and lusting for their team to win the World Series. It's been many years. The White Sox fan asks, calls on God for advice, and he said, when will my team finally win a World Series? And God replies, not in your lifetime. And then the Cub fan works up the courage to ask the same question, and God replies, not in your children's lifetime. And the Red Sox fan has been silent. Finally, he works up the courage to ask God, what about my beloved Red Sox? And God says, not in my lifetime. That story probably now has to be readjusted, but maybe not, because the Cardinals are still waiting in the wings.
You're actually quite right to point out the fact that when we talk about curses and superstitions and achievements, that the World Series lies ahead, not behind, of the Boston Red Sox. But, I mean, Buster, in many ways, and I saw this in some of the New York papers, people writing in saying it doesn't matter what happens now, the real World Series has already taken place and Boston beat us.
I think that's right, and that's because you're talking about this rivalry is an heirloom that's been passed down on both sides among the players, among the fans. In 1999, during the playoffs when the Red Sox and the Yankees played, Yogi Berra walked up to Bernie Williams and he said, we've been playing these guys for 80 years. They can't beat us. And that was the order of things. The Yankee fan knew that they could always beat the Red Sox, and they assumed they would beat the Red Sox. I grew up in Vermont. Like Bob, I grew up in the middle of the other team, you know, one of the teams, Heartland, and then went down to the other side. And fans there, I've known so many who expect their team is going to lose. In the end, they're waiting for the hearts to be broken. And even last week, as this started to come together, you could just see it in the fans of the faces of the fans. They are waiting. They were waiting for something disastrous to happen, and that's why the world has sort of been turned upside down by this.
And Bob Ryan, I can't imagine the 2005 Boston Red Sox, whether they go on and win the World Series or not, when next they take to the field against the Yankees, are they going to be the ones with their chests out, the ones who are saying, well, we're now the champions?
Yes, in fact, they will. Even if they don't win the World Series, they will have that satisfaction. One of the things that has to be addressed soon here in this conversation is the fact that the last 2 years have just turned up the heat so unimaginably and so exponentially that to make this Red Sox triumph even sweeter for their long-suffering fans. If one has, and I think Buster and Harvey would both agree to this, if someone had told you prior to the first game these two teams played in the 2003 season that everything we had known historically was now about to be dwarfed in drama, and that then over the next 2 years, these teams would play 52 games, 2 7-game series, would go 27-25 one way or the other, that they would split the decisive games in extraordinarily dramatic fashion. We would say, well, come on, you can't have it any better than it's already been. And yet I think that is exactly what we just lived through.
Okay, but Harvey Frommer, the Boston Red Sox in Yankee Stadium as the reigning champions, are the Yankees going to become underdogs?
I doubt that the Yankees will become underdogs ever. You have all of those Yankees in the Hall of Fame as opposed to Red Sox in the Hall of Fame. You also have all of the icons that you recited early in the show, the Yankee icons, and you also have those 26 World Championships. It'll take the Red Sox, even if they keep on winning, many, many years just to catch up to that particular number. The pinstripes, the mystique, the Yankee magic is something that permeates baseball and permeates the world of sports. And although the Red Sox are not the little poor guy because they have the second highest payroll in baseball behind the Yankees, they're still perceived by many fans who maybe not be Red Sox fans and also maybe Red Sox fans as the underdogs. And that image will take a long time to be erased. I also have this kind of mixed demographic genetic makeup. I grew up in Brooklyn, and I lived in New York City for many, many years until I moved up here to teach at Dartmouth about 8 years ago. I never really thought about the Red Sox much when I was in New York writing all my sports books. The idea for this book, Red Sox versus Yankees, The Great Rivalry, really came from the students here, the faculty here, and the people who I live among, who are been suffering and still perhaps are a little gun-shy about this sudden success. But I was hearing in August, well, it's over, we'll have to do it again next year. It's a little bit like the old Brooklyn Dodgers, who could never quite beat the New York Yankees in the World Series, even though they had wonderful teams year after year. And the fact that the Red Sox finished six straight years second to the Yankees doesn't make them a bad team, but the Yankees were always just a little bit better. Maybe that will be changing now, but there's still a lot of catch-up to be done.
Okay, but Buster, I want you to jump in here, because a piece that you did for the New York Times today talks about how this is a different Yankees team than the Yankees teams that the Sox faced over the years.
No question. And the Paul O'Neill, Tino Martinez dynasty years, 96 to 2001, that was a team that was, at its core, was homegrown with Jeter and Rivera, Bernie Williams, Mariano Rivera, Jorge Posada. They had been players who were developed in the minor league system. They had come together. They had a tremendous shared history when they, and especially they started adding players like O'Neill and Tino and David Cohn. And those guys had an incredible clubhouse culture that really became a weapon once they got into October. And what's interesting to me, I was thinking about this yesterday, that those roles have reversed. After the Red Sox traded Nomar Garciaparra, they became the team with this incredible culture and a toughness. And you could see in that Yankee series, as the Red Sox started to turn the momentum, that the players began to rely on each other, be inspired by each other, protect each other. Tim Wakefield taking the ball when he's tired. Curt Schilling going out there with blood seeping through his sock. They became the Yankees, and the Yankees became the Red Sox, a bunch of guys trying to hit home runs and sort of getting out outside of what they normally do.
And Bob Ryan, that's part of what you have to try to define in your work as a sports columnist for the Globe, why this is such an attractive bunch of players.
I really think it started last year. I think they became they showed themselves to be a lovable bunch last year. And you know, obviously they came very close to getting it done and then. But this whole cowboy up thing that was inspired by Kevin Millar and made their clubhouse a fun place to be. And it has been a comfortable place for the media, which is something that, as Buster well knows, is not normally the circumstance in Boston rooms over the years.
What is it about Kevin Millar that distinguishes him from an A-Rod or somebody like
Kevin
that?
Kevin Millar is a guy who came in baseball, Major League Baseball, in the back door. He came into the independent league. He played in that Northern League. He's not a pedigree player. He's a complete utter mongrel player. He's a mongrel physically. He's about 5'11". He's a little on the stocky side.
And the hair shows it.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and then he's a good-hearted, good-natured guy. I didn't know a thing about his personality until in the spring training of 2003. The Red Sox played a game in Jupiter, Florida, against the Marlins, and I just happened to be there. And I was astonished to see, as the Red Sox team got off the bus and came, literally a dozen of Florida people, journalists, writers, and cameramen, and TV people, flocking to Kevin Millar to welcome him, to interview him. And I found out that he had been viewed as the heart and soul of the Marlins, the spirit of the Marlins, and I didn't know anything about him. I thought this guy is a magnetic person. He's a guy that enjoys every second that he's wearing a big league uniform.
1-800-423-8255. Connection listeners, that's the number to join us. We've got three very clever sports columnists and writers here talking about what the definition of the rivalry is and how it's changed. We'd like to hear from you on that point. 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. I'm Dick Gordon. You're listening to The Connection. This hour, an examination of the rivalry between the Boston Red Sox and the New York Yankees. Someone writing in the Christian Science Monitor today talked about the Red Sox as a band of shaggy-haired, self-proclaimed idiots who had the daring or the stupidity to wink at the impossible. But having done that and having come out ahead of the New York Yankees, what changes in this long and historic relationship between those two teams? We're at 1-800-423-8255. We're going to take our first call from Providence, Rhode Island. Dave's with us. Hi, Dave.
Hi, how you doing?
I'm fine. What do you think?
Well, you know, your question, it's interesting that you just mentioned a commentator from the Christian Science Monitor. I think your original question was, do myth and magic play a part in a series? And I think they definitely do affect the overall mental climate that a team plays in. And one of the things that I noticed and people love an underdog. And in the last number of years, this rivalry and the perennial underdog status of the Sox have really come to the forefront in the national consciousness. And I think it really plays a part. The day before the seventh game, night before the seventh game, I had a diehard Yankees fan going around inviting people to come to his house and root for the Red Sox because they'd already set a record, and he had been made a believer, so to speak, overnight by what they'd already accomplished. And I think the overall mental climate and the myth that a team plays with definitely affects its performance.
But, Dave, let me interrupt you and ask you a question, though. What happens if or when the Boston Red Sox cease to become underdogs?
Well, then they have a new climate to deal with, same as the Yankees. They have a new climate to deal with, a new body politic of fans, new attitudes to deal with. And it's tough to be number one forever because people love an underdog.
Harvey Frommer, you're one of these people who's not too sure that the roles are going to switch here?
No, because there are a lot of tombstones mocking the past. There is Bucky Dent. There is Aaron Boone. There's Pesky holding the ball in 1946, which I guess will be brought up during this Cardinals series. And there are all of these moments of broken-hearted Red Sox fans. Just to beat the Yankees this year and move on to the World Series is not enough. As I said earlier, I believe that the Red Sox have to do it consistently for year after year to be able to shake the kind of a loser image that they have established over the years.
Bob Ryan, like jump in here. Are you agreeing with this?
There's a couple of things here. Look, this, if the Red Sox fans think that winning a World Series in 2004 will change their relationship with the generic Yankee fan, they're wrong, because then the Yankees will say, oh, great, 26-1. Come and see me when you get to 25. That's what's going to happen there. So if that's what they're seeking, if that's what the fans are seeking from this, they're not going to get that kind of satisfaction. They have to just dwell on the here and now, which is just winning one for its own sake. And I disagree with Harvey to the extent that the history is so overriding that that it can't change things. This group of players only knows its own personal experience, and that personal experience is we're as good or better than these guys. They firmly believe that the lesser team won last year, you know, and that the managerial decision was wrong to take out to leave Martinez in it, that the fates conspired, but they were better, and they set out all year to prove it. They beat the Yankees 11 out of 19 in the regular season, and they honestly believe that they're better. So that in terms of the performance in 2005 and the swagger they will take to the field if they are the world champions, it will be there. They believe we're better than these Yankees.
All right, I'm going to Greensboro, North Carolina next year, and Scott's joining us there. Hi, Scott, are you there?
Yes, sir.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I was born in Connecticut, born in New York. I actually grew up in Connecticut, so I was dead center between New York and Boston. And, you know, growing up, riding the bus, there was the Red Jackets and the Blue Jackets, and, you know, everybody.
Which color jacket were you wearing, Scott?
Well, I was a Yankees fan, born into a family of Yankees fans. And just having that rivalry all my life has always been something. And the past 15 years, I've lived down in North Carolina, so I've been somewhat removed from the passions of New York versus Boston or vice versa. And as I watched this series, I almost wanted to say to myself, you know, of course I want my team to win, but I almost wanted to throw Boston a bone just because of the great baseball that I've managed to see throughout the years, especially the past 2 years. I think it's done nothing but just really enhance this rivalry and the caliber of play that we get to see. And
Scott, can I ask you, though, to reflect on something that Buster Olney was saying earlier in the program, and that is that it may be easier for Yankee fans to accept this particular defeat because this Yankee team is more a collection of high-paid free agents all doing their own thing rather than working together as a team unit. Do you have any less affection for people like A-Rod, for example, on a team like that?
No, I think the Yankees do a good job of bringing people up within their organization. We still have players on the team that came up through our club.
Yeah.
But there's something to be said for George's deep pockets. I mean, I only want to apologize so much. You know, I'd rather have it that way than the other way, you know. I think the differences there between New York and Boston are not, you know, their histories are fairly similar as far as, I mean, we've got George Steinbrenner with incredibly deep pockets, but as far as histories of decisions of building a team and things like that, I think you can see where Boston's made some mistakes in the past more so than New York, where it's worked out differently for each team. But I think that if Boston could be New York as far as operational means they'd probably be doing the same thing.
Buster Olney, what about that relationship between the Boston Red Sox and their own fans? I mean, you don't get to put up those billboards that say, keep the faith. You don't, the signs dare to believe don't mean as much when you're not reaching so high, so far for that one thing you've been waiting for decades. I mean, everybody here is going to agree that Boston has a great fan base. Does that lose some of its magic when a victory like this is sort of in the clubhouse?
No, I don't think so. I think that, as Bob said, I think that the relationship between the two teams will mostly stay the same, because the Yankees are always going to spend so much more money. They're always going to have a chance to get the greatest stars. Next year, their payroll may be close to twice as much as what the Red Sox are going to spend. But one thing to remember, and that's going to go forward with the Yankee fans, what the Red Sox did this week is inflict the deepest wound the Yankees have ever taken in their history, and it will fester forever, because they will be this playoff series was the biggest choke in the history of the baseball postseason.
1-800-423-8255. Your thoughts on how the rivalry has changed? Next to Cape Cod, Massachusetts, Laura's with us. Hi, Laura.
Hi, my name is Laura Sanford, and I was at the 1962 World Series, the seventh game, when my dad pitched a three-hitter. He was pitching for the San Francisco Giants and lost the seventh game of the 62 World Series 1-0 to the Yankees. So I have my own special axe to grind with those New York Yankees, and have been a Red Sox fan because he both my parents are Wellesley natives, and I've been in Boston for many years, and have always felt that the Yankees were the sort of invincible money giants who could always afford to pay for any player and any advantage that money could buy. And also had.
So, Laura, this wasn't so much about the Boston Red Sox winning as it was about the Yankees losing.
No, because I've been a Red Sox fan for many, many years, and my dad coached Louis Tiant, who I've seen at many Red Sox games over the years, and my good friend Val Butterfield, her dad was a coach and a Yankees manager for many years. So we had ongoing rivalries, bringing all our friends to Yankee-Red Sox games.
Bob Ryan, did you want to jump in here?
I'm getting chills here. I grew up as a Giants fan, and Jack Sanford was 24-6 in 1962, and he also pitched a shutout and won a game in that series. And, of course, that's one of the most famous seventh games in history, immortalized by Charles Schultz. Why couldn't McCovey hit the ball 3 feet higher, as we all know?
Well, you know, on the 25th reunion of the Giants-Yankees seventh game, he did. He did. So we at least got to enjoy that in 1987.
Wow, that's wonderful. Well, and, you know, I just want to throw in one important thought here that I think has to be addressed, and that is what the Red Sox ownership in the last 2 years has done to change the nature of this whole rivalry. They have turned the heat up on the Yankees in a way that all the other gentlemanly organizational people had never done. It's changed it completely, and it's made George crazy. It has just made this more of an obsession with Steinbrenner. I cannot stress, Buster, I'm curious of Buster's opinion on this. If he shares my view that it's almost, you can almost toss out the first last five decades in terms of passion, and because the last 2 years have been absolutely more heated than everything those other five decades put together.
No question, and the difference, of course, last one, it did never stop. And when the playoff was over, then A-Rod came into the mix in the pursuit of Alex Rodriguez. They carried the entire winter, and the Yankees wound up getting him, and it just never slowed down. What's interesting is for years that the Yankees from 96 to 2000, they viewed the Red Sox as a sleeping giant, a team that had capability to do great resources, but they really had done a very poor job in the front office of putting all those things together, you know, picking the right players. And the last 2 years, the Yankees' fears were realized.
1-800-423-8255 to Augusta, Georgia next. And Dana's joining us. Hi, Dana.
Hello. Good morning, sir. Fine gentlemen. How are y'all doing today?
Good, thanks. How are you watching this series?
I am disgusted. I am a transplanted New Yorker living in Georgia. And I I normally don't watch the playoff games like that because, you know, I'm 26 years old, and I was always brought them out every year. They always won. And when I looked on the internet, it was 3-0. I was like, oh, man, they got this again. So and then when they started winning, you know, then when they tied it up, I was getting worried. I was like, okay, what's going on here? Next thing you know, the next day, the Boston Red Sox won. I'm like, oh, my God. I said, oh, my God. My world was turned upside down. Just like that 19-year-old you quoted from the New York Times, I was him also. I was just shocked.
So are you done with the Yankees now, Dana? Are they the bums because they lost to the Red Sox? Are you going to be back in the same place next October?
I am a diehard New Yorker, so I support New York. So that's why, in my heart of hearts, I always wanted to see the Mets and the Yankees play for the World Series. And they came close one year, but brave.
Harvey Frommer, have you got some comfort for Dana here?
Some comfort for Dana is to wait basically till next year. And the Met fans are the ones who probably are the happiest in this whole scenario right now. Take some of the heat off them. But in New England, just to contradict the two gentlemen who made the points before, Buster and Bob Ryan.
Yeah, go ahead.
I don't think that what has happened over the past few years can really erase the whole past. And we interviewed somebody like Michael Dukakis, who still has the memory of 1978 when he was leading in the Democratic primary and he lost by Ed King by 40 points with 5 weeks to go. He still has that memory of going down the tubes politically when the Red Sox went down the tubes sports-wise on the Bucky Dent home run. So as I said earlier, the scars are still there with the grandparents, the parents, and the current generation, and I think that is an important part of the culture of this rivalry. Despite your caller who is suffering, the Yankees will be back next year stronger than ever, and I really think that this is probably just a blip in the current rivalry scenario.
You're listening to The Connection. My name is Dick Gordon. Bob Ryan, still a lot of scar tissue there? What do you think?
I think Harvey Passman misunderstood a little bit. Where I'm not suggesting that the history can be erased. I'm not suggesting. Look, I know all about it. I know, but I am saying is, having lived through this on a direct basis now for 35 years, 40 years in the city, 35 working as a journalist, that I am simply saying that the passion on the day to day of trying to of competing with the Yankees is been way expanded beyond what it was before, and I attribute it completely to the presence of this regime, John Henry, Larry Lucchino, and Theo Epstein, who have gone after it in a much more aggressive way than all the other prior regimes who were sort of docile about it. They talked about it, but they didn't know how to do it. As Buster said, this team knows how. These people know how to do it. And
is that marketing?
Is stronger than the last 30 years put together. I will stand on that statement.
Bob, is that money or is that marketing or is that both?
It's a combination of the bankroll and the intelligence. And you know, Theo Epstein going out to Phoenix and having Thanksgiving dinner and not allowing Curt Schilling to take no for an answer. That's what I'm talking about.
1-800-423-8255. Next to Cary, North Carolina. Shannon's on the line. Hi, Shannon.
Hi, Dick. How are you?
I'm fine. So what are you thinking?
Oh, well, I'm frustrated with the negative spin on everything. Did the Red Sox win it or did the Yankees lose it? Is it money? Is it this and that? It's what it is to me is it's for the guys like my father who, born in Massachusetts, played minor league ball, has rooted for the Red Sox his entire life. Every single year, this is the year. This is the year. He's so positive and so full of hope, and he is so elated right now. That's what this is all about. It's a great group of guys who go out, have a great time, have fun on the field and off the field, and they've got this fan base that has just kept the faith.
How old is your dad, Shannon?
64.
How did he celebrate the win?
called me up and did the old Homer Simpson woohoo. he's going to have a party tomorrow night in Massachusetts, and we are having a matching party tomorrow night in North Carolina to watch the World Series.
Can I just ask you to help me though to the next step, because it's kind of what we're trying to figure out on the program here. Having kind of reached the top of that mountain, having finally made it to what he's been waiting for 64 years, does the nature of this rivalry between Boston and New York change at all?
I think it's, I don't know. I think the Red Sox-Yankees thing has been a positive. I think it's, it gives you someone to hate, and that sounds awful, but it gives you, you know, the black and white, the good and bad, the, you know, I don't know, Superman versus, I don't know.
Buster, you got the words for it here?
Lex Luthor would be the one that Superman hated, and he would be the version of the evil empire. You know, I always, growing up in Vermont, I was actually a Dodgers fan as a kid, but all my friends that I grew up with, when I talked to them, I always admired the fact that every year the Red Sox fans were so resilient, because no matter what happened, it seemed like there was always one point in every season when they would start to believe, oh, maybe this is it, maybe this is it, and that's what was so fascinating. I talked to a number of my friends on Wednesday morning and then on Thursday morning, and they were telling me that basically until the last out, they were excited, but they weren't sure if they could trust the situation because they'd been burned in the past.
You know, I think that this is the idea that it can't get better because the Red Sox have achieved parity is utter nonsense, because I lived through some significant rivalries covering the Boston Celtics over the last 30 years, specifically with Philadelphia and Los Angeles, and I can assure you that when there's a perceived parity, that the day-to-day tension is better, that this will actually open up the possibility here of this thing becoming even better and removing that particular dynamic and replacing it with a feeling of equality will absolutely be better. So I reject this notion that the Red Sox winning will
you got to know, Bob, though, that New York fans are going to be looking at this and saying, now we got to take the Sox down next year, and then we can say it was an accident.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's fine. I mean, and Harvey's absolutely right. I know Buster agrees that George is going to be in an absolute frenzy in the offseason, and he will attempt to reload in an almost unimaginable way in order to crush the upstart New Englanders next year. No question. How can this be bad for the rivalry?
1-800-423-8255. I don't think anybody's saying it's going to be bad for the rivalry, but how does it change? If the Red Sox have built this brilliant identity on being the underdogs, the people who are always reaching up for the Yankees, does that change now? What are your thoughts about that? We're at 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. I'm Dick Gordon. You're listening to The Connection. We have three baseball writers with us today helping us find the words to define the Red Sox-Yankees rivalry. What has, if anything, has changed? What happens when a rivalry that's so laden with curses tips the other way? Buster Olney is a senior writer for ESPN, the magazine, author of a book called The Last Night of the Yankee Dynasty. Bob Ryan's a columnist for the Boston Globe and author of When Boston Won the World Series. Harvey Frommer is with us. He's a sports historian, a professor at Dartmouth, and author of a book called Red Sox versus Yankees, The Great Rivalry. To Hyannis, Massachusetts, for our next call. Charlie's with us. Hi, Charlie.
Hey, God bless the Commonwealth. How are you guys?
Thanks for calling. What are you thinking?
Hey, you know, it's so unbelievable that when they won, it still didn't seem real. But at the same time, you know, you guys are talking about the pain. It actually seemed very healing. But I have to ask Harvey and the people of New York, who's your poppy?
We'll find out next year.
Yeah, well, I'm all for that.
Hey, Charlie, can I ask you a question? Charlie?
Yeah.
You talk about the pain. I mean, does this go back in generations?
Yeah, actually, my mom, who's passed, was a huge Sox fan and unfortunately never saw this day. But my grandmother, who's 93, is the only person in my family who's alive in 1918. So we have that connection. But, yeah, my whole family has been suffering through this for a long time. But I think it's a new day. Once we win one, I think you're going to see several over the years. If we win this year, I bet we win three more over the next 10.
I wish you luck.
Hey, who's your poppy?
You'll find out next year.
Hey, that sounds good. I love hearing New York saying, we'll find out next year. What a reversal.
It
hey,
is.
Great show.
It is a change. Charlie, I thank you for your call. We're going next to Franklin, Massachusetts. David's with us. Hi, David.
Yes, how you guys doing?
I'm fine. How do you come at this?
Well, I'm a Yankee fan now living in Massachusetts. And one of the things I heard a little while ago was, I believe it was Bob Ryan had said, that this loss is going to fester for years to come with Yankee Nation. And to be honest with you, I disagree. I think after it's over, it's done with, and next year is going to be a new year. Another thing I just want to...
Hang on a second. Buster, that was you who said that, wasn't it?
Yes, that was me who said that. Yeah, and I think it will, because the Red Sox fans, that's something that they will always be able to hold over the Yankees' heads. And on top, we know it's going to fester, because as George reacts to it, that's what's going to drive him.
Okay, the only... Maybe it's going to fester up here in Red Sox Nation, but I don't think down in New York it's going to matter. I think next year, once the season starts, it's going to be a whole new year. And I know George Steinbrenner, and, you know, I don't agree with everything that he does, but he's going to reload the Yankees like he always does, and now he's going to do it in the mindset of beating the Red Sox. And the other thing is, one thing nobody's touching on is, after this season, in the offseason, there's going to be a lot of changes to the Red Sox team also. Mm-hmm. They're not going to sign everyone that they have now, and they're going to have to do a lot of reloading.
I think that's a very valid point, and I think that we are. But if they do win, I think there are some people who we assume will be going may not be going. And I also think that your point about it won't fester. There's one entity that will make sure that it does fester, that will bring it up at every opportunity, and that is the New York Post. And they will never let the Yankees forget that they were quote unquote choked. Believe me, never.
What do you think, Harvey?
I think, Dick, just coming back to one of your original questions, and if you had Dan Shaughnessy on the show with us, he would tell this tale that he told me, that the Yankee-Red Sox rivalry reminds him of the scene in Casablanca, that great movie, when Peter Lorre turns to Humphrey Bogart and says, "You despise me, don't you, Rick?" And Bogart says, "If I gave any thought, I probably would." And the punchline here is that Shaughnessy continues, "Sometimes I think that's how Yankee people, fans and players, think about the Red Sox. I just think that the Red Sox fans think more about the Yankees than the Yankee fans think about the Red Sox." So I think this, though, may now be changing, because I think the Red Sox victory over the Yankees in 2004 has resulted in some consciousness changing and bending, so that there will be some more thinking about the Red Sox on the part of the Yankee fans. A little bit of the arrogance may have been chiseled away.
Bob Ryan, we've been here before. You go to the late 40s, you go to the late 70s. There was a time, was there not, when the Red Sox were an even match for the Yankees?
From 1946 to 1950, the Boston Red Sox won more games than any team in baseball. And what they had to show for it was one loss in a playoff game at home against Cleveland in 1948 and a loss in the last day of the season in 1949 in Yankee Stadium. And so they were totally thwarted in their ultimate objective. And Harvey, what you said is exactly, that completely proves or vindicates my point about having lived through things such as the Celtics and Lakers. This is a new and better day can dawn if the Red Sox win the World Series and advance, you know, and challenge the Yankees and challenge George, as that will do, to do something about it. And it'll only be better. It'll be better.
Right, I agree with you totally, Bob, on that, and I think it'll be a good thing for the Yankees and the Red Sox, and also for baseball and fans, no matter which team they root for.
We're going next to Leapers Fork, Tennessee. Wayne's joining us on the line from there. Hi, Wayne.
Hi, how are you?
Fine.
I wanted to ask everyone about the psychology of the Boston fan base. It seems to me that a team that loses year after year and yet has a solid fan base, there's something about those fans that is almost inexplicable. Now, the Red Sox have had some success over the years, it's true, but I follow a football team who hasn't had a 20-year losing streak. Mr. Olney, I'm sure, is aware of who that is. There's a psychology among the fans, the hardcore, which continue to go back year after year, which really is inexplicable, and I'd love to hear these guys speculate on what they think explains it.
Buster, do you want to start on that?
Yeah, he's speaking of Vanderbilt University, which went 8-3 my freshman year in 1982 and has not had a winning season since during the regular season. And that's what I was saying before. I just had enormous respect. I always had enormous respect and admiration for Red Sox fans, because they always managed to find the glimmer of hope, even as they didn't trust it, even as they didn't trust success. And that's a pretty unique thing in sports.
I'll tell you, though, something, Wayne. I was watching I think it was was it the seventh or the sixth game? I can't remember. Anyway, and I was getting calls from friends hundreds, thousands of miles away saying, hey, are you watching? Is this the moment? And I'm curious to know from your perspective in Tennessee whether or not this fascination with this rivalry is something that kind of lives on the East Coast or has tentacles that go right across the country.
Oh, no, it's very much a live issue around here. I play in a basketball league, and at the game yesterday or whichever day it was right after the Red Sox won, that was the topic of conversation. Everybody had an opinion about it. Everybody knew every play in the game. So it's a very much a live issue down here, and it's not just people who've been transplanted from the East, although there are some of those.
Mm-hmm.
As much as anything else, it's that continual inability to win that fascinates people so much.
Bob Ryan, you make mention of fans from all over the world.
Absolutely. And, well, I mean, this speaks to sports in general and the availability of modern communication that we're even aware of this. But I have gotten in the last 2 days, over a dozen countries have checked in, and the USS John Stennis somewhere in some ocean has checked in, and people continue to check in, telling me their experience watching the game and their feelings and so forth. And it's some of them are just transplanted Americans, but some of them are not. Some of them are legitimate baseball fans who have maybe traveled to the U.S., got caught up in this a little bit,
right,
and then have taken that interest home and have now found themselves hooked. A gentleman in Sweden, for example, who has stayed up all night to watch the game, and this is out there. It is. I think it is. But mostly it is the Red Sox and Yankees thing. Had this taken place, I wonder what the other two gentlemen think of this. Suppose that this 0-3 comeback had matched, say, for example, the Indians and the Twins. Would it have resonated one-tenth as much as it did because it was the Red Sox and Yankees?
Absolutely not. Rivalry in sports,
yeah.
No way.
So that's what we're talking about here. We're talking about a very special, you know, it's one of the three great rivalries in baseball, along with the Cubs, Cardinals, and Dodgers, Giants. And right now, it clearly has moved to the front of the
book. Buster, is that because we anticipate a shove in the face or a manager knocked on his butt, or we anticipate a kind of a heightened level of confrontation between these two teams even before any game begins?
Yeah, I think that's part of it, and I agree with what Bob was saying. The last 2 years, it's really heightened it. You know, we had A-Rod being traded to the Yankees, and as A-Rod plays, he suddenly has become the focal point of the anger of the Red Sox players. We had the incident the other day when he slapped the arm of pitcher Bronson Arroyo, and I think there's a lot of expectation. Here we are, you know, 7-8 months away from opening day, and people think there's going to be a fight. They're going to throw at A-Rod next year when they resume, and you're right. That is definitely part of it.
My name's Dick Gordon. You're listening to The Connection. Harvey Frommer, in your book, The Great Rivalry, did you find in doing the interviews for that book that the reach of this rivalry goes way beyond New York and New England?
It goes worldwide. I have a sports email letter that goes out to thousands of people, just to echo what Bob was saying before. And I've also gotten hundreds and hundreds of emails from around the world talking to me about the Yankee-Red Sox rivalry. I think it's at fever pitch right now because of some of the stuff that Buster said and some of the stuff that Bob said. And I think it's only going to be getting stronger as the Red Sox become stronger going into next season. And George is a person that everybody has to keep right in their sights because he's not going to be – he was very polite and diplomatic in complimenting the Red Sox for their win over his team, but he's not going to rest a moment, and he'll be pouring a lot of money into making the Yankees even stronger, and the Yankee haters even more hateful of what he will be doing.
All right, let's go to Chapel Hill, North Carolina next, and Steve's joining us. Hi, Steve.
Hi, thanks for talking to me.
Mm-hmm.
Harvey, I just think you're kind of underestimating the effect that this series is going to have, the way it played out so dramatically with the Yankees grabbing a 3-0 lead, and, you know, the Game 3 just humiliating the Red Sox 19-8, and then the Sox just clawing their way back and forcing a Game 7, and then in Game 7 you had the Yankees starting pitcher looking like he was ready to be physically ill out on the mound while the Red Sox were knocking the ball into the right field stands. And
So what are you saying, Steve, that a lot of the mystique has really changed?
Yeah, I think a lot of the mystique now, I mean, it's kind of a, like, what have you done for me lately thing where I mean, I think just the enduring images from this series of, like, I think on the Red Sox side, people are going to remember Schilling being out on the mound with the blood on his sock and pitching through the pain and the tendon. And on the Yankee side, people are going to remember, you know, A-Rod running down the first baseline rather childishly trying to slap the ball out of Arroyo's glove, you know.
Right. But you are a Red Sox fan, right?
You could tell that, huh?
Right. So enough said, right?
So that disqualifies him.
Definitely.
All right, 1-800-423-8255.
Who's your poppy?
Bob, what do you think?
I definitely think that this thing is going to get better, and I just think that the one reason is that this team seems to be able to shut out the history thing, and they're not focusing on it. I also think there's one compelling figure in all this that really has made a difference in the attitude, and it is Schilling. Getting Curt Schilling, who had on his resume, it says, I beat the Yankees in the World Series in 2001. That mm-hmm. resonates in that clubhouse. That's like when I remember when Bill Parcells came in here and I asked him about wearing his rings, and you know every once in a while he brings out the rings and shoves it in somebody's face. You know, well, Curt Schilling has had a credibility that you can't buy, and he lived up to all the hype in that game six. So yeah, I think he's a very crucial figure in this current relationship.
Well, Buster, looking ahead, does the momentum that Boston took out of this series with the Yankees offer them an edge over the Cardinals?
I think it does. And I think because of the fact they get an extra day of rest over St. Louis, I like the pitching matchups and I like their offense and I like the momentum that they take coming out of that series because they had to rely on each other. It seems like that this series brought them together even more than they were before and allowed them to trust each other. And I think they're going to beat St. Louis.
Bob?
I'm officially in my Red Sox fan worry mode as opposed to my writer's objective mode. I listened to Curt Schilling on local radio this morning talk about the St. Louis defense, which in his judgment includes not only great defensive players, but players who he feels may be as good as have ever played the position in the history of the game. And he's enamored of Scott Rowland, particularly at third base, and Edmund in center field, and Matheny at catcher. And so, yes, they're a very formidable team with a great hitting lineup, and I can see Albert Pujols hitting one into some the quadrangle at MIT. But I think the Red Sox are this is it. It is the year they'll find a way to win.
All right, Bob Ryan, thanks so much for being with us on the program today. Harvey Fromer, Buster Olney, nice to hear from all of you. And yes, indeed, come Saturday night, we will see just in fact how far this goes. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection.